It's a long road. Still pouring. Still a lot of rain. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. I've heard the words epic. I've heard historic. That's what it is. Things are being handled really well. The spirit is incredible of the people. Coordination between all of the different services, as you know, has been going very well. Nothing can defeat the unbreakable spirit of people of Texas and Louisiana. Right now, every American heart sends its love and support to those whose lives have been upended, totally upended.
President Trump yesterday at the White House, our Joe Gomez joins me this morning on News Radio WTAM 1100. Joe, he there yesterday making these comments with the head of Finland. He, though, today, and the First Lady expected to head to Texas?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen at some point this morning. They're going to be arriving in Corpus Christi, Texas, where Hurricane Harvey first made landfall. And then they're going to be heading up north to Austin, Texas, to view the Department of Protection Services in Texas, DPS, in Austin, and I think talk with some state lawmakers. But that's it. They're going to be avoiding the Houston area, I think, because the flooding continues there. And also some heavy rain is expected, I believe, today and then going into tomorrow as well.
I heard Vice President Pence with Rush yesterday, just left a FEMA meeting. I think the number's still up nearly maybe a half million people that could be eligible for FEMA help. I see a story they got like $3 billion on hand. There's no question, though, the money will be there from Washington to help.
Yeah, I mean, that's what President Trump said. I mean, he said that FEMA already has the money on hand right now to deal with the crisis as it stands. But, of course, the issue is how many years is it going to take for some of these folks to bounce back from this? Because, Houston is the fourth largest city in the country. And so there probably is going to be the need. In fact, Trump talked about it yesterday for disaster relief bills to be passed from Congress, providing more assistance for these people that live in the region. And so Trump talked about how he's optimistic those bills are going to get passed very quickly. Even Nancy Pelosi had called for that to happen.
Some have said in the last 24 hours, before Charlottesville, Trump was trying to get this infrastructure thing going. He had that press conference up at Trump Tower, was showing all the bureaucracy. The politicians rally around money for Houston, for Texas to rebuild, and that'll go throughout the rest of the country in some big infrastructure bill.
It's a good point. I mean, maybe President Trump could use this to his advantage for that infrastructure bill, because Houston is definitely going to have a lot of infrastructure problems after this storm. So it could be the launching pad that Trump needs to kind of further that cause, I guess.
Well, you worked there for many years. What are you hearing from your friends there now?
Well, I think that the biggest concern right now is in the suburbs still. Kind of around the central part or inside of the loop, as they call it in Houston. It's kind of higher ground, so not a lot of intense flooding, but in the suburbs is where you're seeing a lot of massive flooding, where people have been swept away. And now that there's more rain continuing for the next couple of days, I understand that there's a real concern that this may get out of control, even in the center part of the city, where so far it's been more or less in control. So they're not out of the woods by any stretch yet.
All right, Joe Gomez, Washington. President Trump heads there today. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks.
Speaking of Trump heading there, images, very important, of course, during a crisis with the President of the United States. Political analyst Steve Roberts, this is a time when government shines and works, or, as we've seen in the past, there can be problems.
Absolutely. This is true for governors, mayors, and especially presidents. And a very high visibility moment with a lot of risk, a lot of reward. President Trump's advisors have said very openly, we remember Katrina. And we remember President Bush flying over the devastation, the photograph etched in memory, and President Bush himself saying in his memoirs, it was a big mistake. It made me look detached and unconcerned. On the other hand, there are moments like this when can enhance a presidency. I remember right on the eve of the 2012 election, Obama on the beaches of New Jersey, inspecting the storm damage from Hurricane Sandy. At his side, Governor Christie, a Republican of New Jersey, praising Obama and praising the federal response, much to the chagrin of Republicans. A lot of risks here, a lot of rewards.
The city of Houston, very large, fourth largest in the country. How big, how much does it mean, though? They think the build back, the numbers right now, $30 to $40 billion in property damage and about $7 billion in lost economic output because of Harvey. I mean, you know, people getting paid, going to restaurants, that sort of thing. The region around Houston plays an outsized role in the U.S. economy. It projected gross output of some $441 billion is about 2.5% of the nation's economy is around Texas, is around Houston, where this where Harvey hit. Before Harvey, they had a 5.3% unemployment rate. The shutdown in the gas refinery shipping lanes in the Houston area, disrupting energy economy in this country. Refineries there account for 2.46 million barrels a day. That's about 13% of what we produce in this country. Also, Texas is the leader in chemical production. About a third of our U.S. chemicals are produced in Texas. A lot of that production has been stopped. And shipping, the Port of Houston is the second largest in the nation. And when it comes to shipping, and of course, nothing's happening there right now. So a lot of economic trickle-down, if you will, because of Harvey throughout the country with what Houston is dealing with. Two words, rain and help. News Radio WTAM 1100 teaming up with the Red Cross to help our friends in Texas after the devastating flooding. Help out now at redcross.org or give $10 by texting Harvey to 90999. Every bit helps, and your help is needed now. Thank you from WTAM 1100. Aviation travel news this morning, and Harvey, our expert, is Jay Ratliff. Let's go through some numbers here. Where are we at this morning on this thing?
Well, right now, we've already seen 1,800 flights canceled today, and Bill, the chaos is really spreading. We had 4,200 flights canceled over the weekend, and we've been averaging close to 15,000 flights a day that have experienced some sort of a delay going back to Saturday. We had a fewer number than that on Friday, but it has been an absolute mess from coast to coast. And to put that in perspective, yesterday we were looking at close to 14,000 delayed flights, 2,000 that were canceled. So the 16,000 flights, there's only about 24,000 flights that are scheduled to operate in, across the country. So more than 65% of the flights from coast to coast experienced some sort of a delay. Not all of those weather delays were Harvey-related, of course. Most of them were, and it continues to be an absolute headache as airlines are trying to accommodate many of the inconvenienced passengers around the country on delayed flights when they already are filled, you know, 85-90%.
Jay, we've had hurricanes before. We've had airlines with problems with hurricanes. The number's so high because Houston's one of these big hubs. It's just a big city.
But I think, Bill, what's really throwing a wrench here is the fact that many times the hurricanes come through and they're a 2 or 3 day event. As far as they come through, there's a cleanup and then there's a slow restoration process to have the airport open and resume flight operations. With a storm that's moving as slow as this one, that's dumping the amount of rain that it is, with no ability really for it to drain off in many places, it's really creating some problems because the Hobby Airport in Houston, the smaller of the two, we are looking at the runway still having some standing water on it. That airport is scheduled, according to the Federal Aviation Administration, to open up tomorrow morning. I don't think that's going to happen. Yesterday morning, the larger Intercontinental Airport was supposed to operate. Are open, rather, but it still has issues, and they pushed that back until Thursday, and that may be wishful thinking. So a lot of things have to happen before those two airports can fire back up and resume operation because they've got all the inspections that we've talked about that have to take place from the runways to the tarmac to the terminal to the ground equipment to make sure that everything is safe for passengers to arrive in aircraft. And as a result, we're just seeing things kind of pushed down the road. And, you know, had this been a September storm, we would be looking at passenger loads that would be far less on average per day than what we're seeing for the last week of one of the busiest summer travel seasons that we've seen in a number of years.
Jay Ratliff with me. Before we get to some hub delays, as you say, the airports in Houston closed for several more days. You know, part of this just probably getting crews together. You know, who can work? Who can get out of their house? Who can safely get there, right?
We, you know, Sunday night, they had several hundred passengers that were trapped at the Hobby Airport. I say trapped because no flights could come in because the airport was closed, and you couldn't get out on any of the roads to get anywhere because of the flooding. And Southwest Airlines received special permission from the FAA to bring in five of their jets to a closed airport to airlift those people back to the Dallas airport. They did that for free. And so it's something that when you look at the airport itself, you've got to worry about the staffing levels. Can we get enough people to the airport that's going to be adequate to screen the passengers, to check the passengers in, and then, of course, all the flight operations side of things, in addition to people that service the aircraft, fuel the aircraft. I mean, it's a chorus of people, and if they can't get to the airport, it's going to be very difficult for many of those flights to operate.
Flying out today, besides Harvey in Houston, what else are you looking at?
A lot of rain towards the northeast. Philadelphia, D.C., even New York later in the day. We could be looking at delays, weather-related, of 60 to 90 minutes.
Aviation travel, Jay Ratliff, our guy. More at jratliff.com. Good info. Thanks, bud.
All right, Bill.
Two words, rain and help. News Radio WTAM teaming up with the Red Cross to help our friends in Texas after the devastating flooding. Help out at the redcross.org or give $10 by texting Harvey to 90999. Every bit helps, and your help is needed now. Thank you from News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Good morning. Tom on Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, at Bill Wills WTAM, Tom tweeted a question. Bill, can you run down a quick list of all the countries around the world who have pledged aid to Texas hurricane victims? When I see a list, I'll let you know. I have seen this. Mexico did offer support and condolences Sunday in a series of tweets from government leaders, but they also still said they're not going to pay for the wall. They were reacting to some of Trump's tweets, but I've not seen anything else from other countries. I have seen a couple of stories about, hey, did you see? I mean, all these amazing pictures out of Houston. A couple of them, though, aren't quite true. There was one tweet showing former President Barack Obama helping victims in Houston with the hurricane. Have you seen that? That's actually a picture from a D.C. homeless shelter in 2015. That thing has been retweeted, they say, over 20,000 times. Also, many pictures of sharks swimming down Houston's city streets, circling the bottom of elevators or the bottom of different stores. And Joel Osteen, do you watch him on Sunday? Celebrity pastor Joel Osteen drawing intense criticism online for keeping his mega church closed, which is near Houston, downtown Houston. It's got over almost 17,000 seats at Lakewood Church. He, though, when I saw this yesterday, one of his staff tweeted back some pictures that the church had water in it and just simply cannot open up. So kind of going back and forth on Twitter with what you're seeing and with the effects of Harvey. All your favorite musics, all your favorite stations on the iHeartRadio app. Plus, I've been using it to listen to news coverage out of Houston. Just a little search on there, KTRH, our news talk. It's amazing to hear firsthand what's happening in Houston. It's all on the iHeartRadio app. Thank you for using it. If you're already using it this morning and have us on, thanks much. Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder. Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com with us this morning. Talk about our teams. Graduate Benedictine, eight-time Ohio Sports Writer of the Year, and wrote about patience over the weekend in his weekly faith column, and I certainly appreciated that. And he's been very patient holding this morning. Hi, Terry.
I must have held 12 seconds. You're right.
It's all about patience. And speaking of patience, recent column you wrote, okay, it's Kizer. This is the guy a lot of you wanted. He's a rookie. So just be ready and be patient, right?
Right. As Hugh Jackson said yesterday, we have to be ready for the good, bad, or the whatever. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot of the whatever, and it's probably not going to be pretty. And I just, you know, I wanted Osweiler to play, but he didn't give me any reason to say, gee, I hope they give him the job once he got in there.
Well, I agree, too. I thought that would be the direction to go with the veteran, Terry. But you're right. He did not do a thing to really inspire you at all. And I guess now here's the thing. Being patient, when you go with Kizer, who actually has been the best quarterback in this preseason, now you get into the games that count. And even if he struggles, at least you're not – I don't think you'll have veterans that are looking at the coach looking on the bench for anybody that's better.
I hope not. And I also hope the Kizer understands he really hasn't seen anything yet. I mean, think about this. When you're a rookie quarterback and you play in the preseason, I'm not even going to get into how the defense has suddenly become more complicated, but you don't even face a team that is actually prepared for you. Nobody prepares for the opposing quarterback in the preseason. how about this? Because you really don't play like a full game, nobody makes any halftime adjustments on you. So not only is the defense you're facing pretty bland and so on, it doesn't particularly change. And you're not also out there just facing four full quarters of NFL action. And that is, from people that I'd never obviously played in the league or whatever, when I talk to some people I have, it says it's just such a different speed of the game from the preseason to the regular season, because even if you're facing the first string, they're not playing full go like they will once September 10th comes.
I agree, Terry. It is a real challenge, and while I think that they bolster the offensive line and they should have the ability to run the ball a bit better with Crowell, there's still some real question marks about the receiving core. It's not like Deshaun is a Roethlisberger when he stepped into that Steeler team when he was a rookie.
And also, Pittsburgh just had their whole system and everything going. I mean, the Browns now have continuity because it's the same offensive coordinator for 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Seriously. I mean,
yeah,
that's
you're right.
The definition of continuity around here.
Yeah.
And that, like Joe Thomas would say, well, that's like progress. I'm going, oh, my goodness, think about that.
Man.
But it is true. Because they haven't had the same offensive coordinator for 2 years in a row now, until you go back to Brian Daboll.
Terry Pluto,
Eric Mangini.
Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dieter, Cleveland.com, with us over on the Indians front. Kluber last night, 6-2. They roll in New York against the Yankees.
And this pitching night after night, it's just been terrific to watch. I mean, this is so exciting because they've been doing it, you know, without Miller and without Brantley and some of the others. But Miller and Brantley are all-stars. And to see Corey Kluber, who, you know, he twisted an ankle a couple weeks ago. I always get nervous whenever anything happens to Kluber. He's durable, but, you know, this is Cleveland. You're afraid something's going to happen to one of your stars whenever they have a bit of an injury. And then you saw, I mean, my goodness, whether you were talking about Mike Clevenger the other night, too, that was so exciting for me to see him because he has a lot of talent. You know, Bauer has pitched well. That starting pitching, if they get Miller back, even if they don't have all of Brantley and that, if you go into the playoffs with those guys and Francona as your manager, that is a very, very that's a team because, like, you know, they could knock off Houston or whoever and get back to the World Series.
Absolutely. And boy, what we're seeing with Kluber, Terry, his consistency is just off the charts, isn't it?
Right, and they had all those stats on the ESPN broadcast about he throws the fewest pitches per inning, and you know, it just shows the value of control. And when they talk about this is the guy to emulate, that's what they tell the young pitchers: talk to Kluber, watch what he does, do what he does, because he came up the hard way.
Right.
I mean, I wrote a long story a long time ago when the Indians traded for him. Listen to this. He wasn't ranked among the top 30 prospects with the San Diego Padres.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow.
Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dieter, Cleveland.com. Great follow on Twitter as well. Check him out up online, Cleveland.com, in the Plain Dieter. Terry, thanks much.
Thanks, guys.
More football talk, I'm sure, today. Our Lady of the Wayside recognizes our friend Sam Artigliano as a Starlight
Humanitarian. Well deserved,
yep. Just can't wait for that. I get a chance to emcee that. Fred McLeod will be there. Today's a great day. The Wayside is really recognizing the three great sports teams that have been such great partners over the years, the Browns, Indians, Cavaliers. Our friend Curtis Danberg will be there representing the Indians, Fred McLeod with the Cavs, and we'll have people from the Browns as well. So that'll be at Our Lady of the Wayside luncheon today at Executive Caterers Landerhaven if you're going to be there for that. Look forward to seeing you. Say hi, and we'll be honoring Sam Artigliano. Can't wait for that. Coming up this weekend, Labor Day weekend, your summer's last chance to dine, drink, and dance. It is, of course, our Cleveland Oktoberfest at the Cuyahoga County Fairgrounds. Candace Tracy, kind of stop in this morning. Good to see you, first of all. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I am good, and it's Oktoberfest time.
It is Oktoberfest time with the gates opening at 4 o'clock on Friday until midnight, and Saturday and Sunday, noon until midnight, and on Monday of Labor Day, noon until 8 p.m., Bill, and we are ready to rock it.
We've got music. There's a Elvis tribute there. We got the Cadillac Band. There's educational things. You can dance, you can drink, you can eat, and just enjoy the weekend, right?
There is something sure to delight, young and old alike, is our motto out there. And Bill, you are such a lover of music and all of that. Obviously, we have the traditional groups, the Chardon Polka Band, sure, the Clabberheads, Fred Zwick's International Sound Machine, but we got the best cover bands across the U.S. too that you mentioned there, including our own Spasmatics. And we've got what we're very proud to bring in is Bruce in the USA. He was voted the number one Bruce Springsteen tribute band.
Fantastic. That's great. Now, you also gave me a copy of what's called German Life. It's a magazine, and our Oktoberfest was one of these featured?
Yes, sir. That is an international publication, and Cleveland Oktoberfest is the featured Oktoberfest this year. We're very proud.
Page 19, right? Turned right to it.
How about that?
That's some great recognition. That is fun.
We're very proud. We put on a great event. It's this weather's going to just get out of here and give us a great weekend. And Bill, you know we've got the best thing in microbrew competitions. We've got the Miss Oktoberfest pageant. We've got the Wiener Dog races. We've got the Cleveland Oktoberfest 5K on Monday of Labor Day benefiting Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital. And you know the thing we're very proud of, Bill, is that Cleveland Glockenspiel. The largest in the U.S. is a live two-story cuckoo clock with dancer skits and bead tosses every hour. It's a great time.
You do, whether you want to come out with a family, you want to come out with a date, have some fun, enjoy beverage, enjoy food. There's something there for everybody, right?
Absolutely, okay. Bill. We've had a buddy of ours tell us he comes out on Friday night to enjoy the microbrews with his buddies. He comes back on Saturday with his wife and some other couples to enjoy the German wine. And then he brings back the kids Sunday or Monday. So it truly is a family event.
And with him in mind, you got a four-day pass that's available, right?
Absolutely, we do. Check all that out at ClevelandOktoberfest.com.
It all kicks off Friday when?
At 4 p.m. Gates open.
Fantastic. Cuyahoga County Fairgrounds, our Oktoberfest for the weekend, your final chance to enjoy some dancing and some food and all sorts of fun. Good stuff.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Candace. Good seeing you.
The pitch. Swung and blasted. Deep right field. Way up and out of here. Into the second deck. Jose Ramirez, 2. New York 2. Boy, did he put a charge into that baby.
Tom Hamilton on the call this morning. Check out a great interview Andre Knott, Mike Snyder, did with Fox Sports' Andre Knott, did with Jose when he heard about the number 20.
Yeah.
When it comes to home runs.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. WilsonSnyder.com. You will see it. Indians update. Jim Rosenhaus is in from New York. Brought to you by Falls Motor City. Game 2 tonight with the Yankees after a 6-2 win last night. Morning, Rosie. How are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Good, buddy. 6-2 win. Let's just start offensively. Home run balls last night, right?
Yeah, they're flying out. And this is a good home run park, especially to right field. They say it's one thing on the wall in terms of distance, but people still wonder if it's really true. Pitchers hate it. But you know what? Good swings last night. Good to see Jose Ramirez. It had been about a month since he had hit a home run. And that's not a big part of his game, but it's become enough of his game where you miss it when things aren't going well. And he's been in that three hole for Michael Brantley while Brantley's been injured. So to see him have a game like he did last night, that's encouraging. And Santana keeps rolling, and Austin Jackson chipped in. So that long ball's always nice, I think, whenever you can get them. And they got a bunch last night.
And even, Jim, to manufacture a run with Zimmer the way they did after Santana's homer, it looks like Bradley's kind of coming around after that horrible slump that he was going through.
You know what, Mike? It's nice to see. And it's funny how things work out. You wonder if they would have been as patient with him as they were if all the outfielders had been healthy. They kind of had to keep playing him because of the injuries, and it worked out great. And I will say, Terry Francona is really good at trying to allow guys to work through issues. But sometimes that's hard for a younger player because there's no track record to go by. But they had to stay with Zimmer, and they did stay with him because of all the other things that he brings. And we saw that last night. And now he's mixing in some base hits again like he was earlier. And the more he gets on base, the more he can wreak havoc. And you know, opposing catchers hate it when he gets on the bases because he'll go to second, he'll steal a bag. He's only been caught once all year, and then good things can happen from there.
Yeah, he put some pressure, and I think the Yankees caved into it last night. Jim, I hate to be ho-hum about it, but Corey Kluber, it's his demeanor when I play sound bites from him. It's kind of also matter of fact. He's so, you know, he's got his regimented style and everything. What we're seeing, though, is really off the charts from Corey.
Yeah, you're not alone, Mike. I mean, it's just, you'd be shocked if he gave up four runs in a game, and that's such a great compliment to him. He's so consistent, and last night, you know, there were a couple of runs here and there for the Yankees, and they actually fell behind for a little bit to the Indians, but you never got the feeling that it was going to get away from them in terms of allowing a bunch of runs, and then all of a sudden the game turns. Because of who he is, and you're right. I think to him it's real matter of fact. But that's the beauty right now of Corey Kluber is the consistency. And it's interesting. The game was on ESPN last night, and when the national guys come in, they can't wait to see him. And we see him all the time, and we don't take him for granted. But you expect the excellence, and it really is a national thing now where people expect Kluber to be as good as he's been.
Hey, Jim, it was September 1st coming up Friday. They can expand the roster. You mentioned they've been a little thin in that outfield, but they should be a little – Tito will have more options starting this weekend, won't he?
He will, and this is the nice thing with the injuries. They don't have to make a move to get somebody back as long as they just wait till Friday, which I think they will. I think – there's a good chance we'll see Lonnie Chisenhall Friday. Abe Almonte may be ready to go by then, and then whatever they would deem to be bringing up from Columbus. But it's certainly helping with the amount of players who would be coming back from injury, and it appears as if Chisenhall would be the first of those, and they probably could get him back here in New York, but then they'd have to make a roster move, and they'll just wait till Friday.
Right. I mean, injury is one thing. Some of these guys just stay on the plane. You'll be on the roster here in a few days. Just keep traveling with us.
Yes.
Jim Rosenhaus on the Indians. Trevor Bauer tonight, your Gagliotto.com Drive Insider at 6. Thanks, Rosie.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, boy. Well, let's put it this way. If you were watching the season finale a couple of nights ago, you weren't the only one by far. This thing drew in, are you ready, 16.5 million viewers.
That's wow.
According to Nielsen data. Yeah, but it counts for night of viewing and streaming on HBO. Those numbers, Bill, make it the most watched episode in the entire series.
And I hate to sound old school, but we're still talking about not, you know, network television, right?
Right. Well, we're talking HBO here, and, you know, the numbers, they can get as granular as they want with them, but, you know, that's pretty, I mean, 16.5 million. I mean, now, and think about how those numbers are going to increase next year when the series finale happens. I mean, this is going to be some kind of event, I can tell you that.
Really strong. And as you say, social media as well. I mean, Game of Thrones has been huge.
Yeah, it really has. It's really become, you know, my wife and I were talking about this the other night. You know, HBO has really tapped into that Sunday night thing. I mean, we go back to when The Sopranos were on. You know, it's like the end of the weekend.
Yep.
You want to kick back. You want to, you know, watch that water cooler show. And The Sopranos was it for many years. And then along comes Game of Thrones, and they think, like, you know, how's this going to live up to Tony Soprano and Pauly Walnuts? Well, it certainly has surpassed it in many ways.
Game of Thrones. A lot of people talking about it. All right, while I got you, one other story here. I see Hellboy trending. What's up there?
Yeah, here's what's going on. So they're rebooting Hellboy. If you remember, they had two movies back in the 2000s. This is a fantasy character based on the comic book. And Ed Skrein was due to be cast as one of the characters in there, a Japanese-American was cast at. Now, Ed Skrein, being a white actor, started to come under fire on this whole thing because in the original source material, the character, Major Ben Diamio, is a Japanese-American. So under his own conscience, he said that he just couldn't go ahead and star in this thing.
Hmm.
He said it is clear that representing this character in a culturally accurate way holds significance for people. Representation of ethnic diversity is important, especially to me as I'm from a mixed heritage family. Now, Bill, this is the first time in recent years that an actor, has, you know, really backed out of a major Hollywood movie role over concerns about whitewashing. Let's look at the pattern that's going on here. Scarlett Johansson in the movie Ghost in the Shell, that character was Asian. Okay, Iron Fist on Netflix, Danny Rand was of Asian descent, and they cast Finn Jones. Doctor Strange, Tilda Swinton playing the Ancient One. The Ancient One in the source material was of Asian descent. So there's a little bit of a pattern here, and the producers of Hellboy actually backed the decision. They said they're going to be looking into recasting the part with an actor more consistent with the character in the source material.
Interesting. You're right. You don't see and hear actors and actresses turning down jobs. I mean, they're always normally looking for work. Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah. We all got to get paid, you know, especially right. If you're an actor. You know, I mean, this guy, you know, while he's not A-list, you know, he's fairly well-known, especially in fanboy circles. He also played Ajax, the villain in Deadpool. But this is a pretty significant move.